Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. Seamus Heaney, the widely recognized Irish poet who passed away last year, once said, quote, "I can't think of a case where poems change the world, but what they do is they change people's understanding of what's going on in the world," end quote. So how does poetry change our understanding of the world? How can poetry inspire, motivate, inform, and transform us and society? On today's Your Call, we are marking National Poetry Month by spending the hour talking about poetry. How has poetry affected your life? We'd love for you to share your favorite poems and poets throughout the hour. And joining us today is Devorah Major. She's San Francisco's former poet laureate, writer, performer, and part-time senior adjunct professor at the California College of the Arts and poet in residence at the Fine Arts Museums in San Francisco. And Devorah joins me here in studio. Hi, Devorah. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thank you for having me.
It's always so good to see you. Thanks. And it's always nice to spend the hour talking about poetry with you. And, you know, I always wonder when we do these shows, because things move so fast and there's so much technology and so much news and we're so bombarded, how do you see poetry fitting into all of this? Because things are changing so quickly.
I think that's part of what poetry does, is give you a moment to reflect on what's going on or how they are changing at a kind of a gut level, because there is so much being thrown at us from every direction. How do you process it? And for me, a poetry processes things on a deeper level. You know, what are the underlying reasons, this spiritual, economic, social, but what's the foundation that this movement is based on? So
how have all of the changes that we're going through affected the way you write your poetry and think about poetry?
I'm not sure from the inside I can say. I think that one thing with poetry that's always issue is, who is your audience? Who are you writing for? Are you writing for yourself? Mm. Are you writing for others? And I think one thing I know, that when I was a younger poet, my stuff was very thick and rich and flowery. I was just in love with Dylan Thomas and people who wrote with that kind of. And I noticed that I've gotten cleaner and cleaner and simpler and simpler. And I think that's because I want to make sure that I have a poetry that is accessible, sophisticated, but accessible. I mean, I don't see what the point is if people don't get it.
Do you think that that's the case in many instances? Do you hear that from people a lot, that, oh, I don't really read poems because I don't get it?
Oh, absolutely. Huh. Absolutely. That's most of what I hear. Either they find it boring, or they think it's not for them, or they just say, I just don't get it. Or they come up to me afterwards, I get your poetry. I don't get most poetry. And I say, and I'm always like, well, you don't read enough. I'm one of many who, you know.
What does it mean to make a poem simple?
I think that, and I'm sorry, I can't say which poet it is. I heard this in Alejandro Murguia, who's the current poet laureate at San Francisco Speech. He said that a poem is the right word in the right place, or the best word in the best place. That's not him speaking, that's somebody else they quoted. But anyway, the best word in the best place. I think that it really is doing that and no more, not the best 12 words. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? That if you can say it with three, you say it with three. You don't just to make curly cues and make it ornate. You don't have to do all that, because that can often cloud it. And I would rather it be just clean.
And also, what about the power of just reading maybe 15 words at a time? Because we were reading a couple of short poems, and it does have a pretty powerful effect on you. And you don't think about it until you realize, I just read 10 words, not an entire article, and I was greatly affected by these
words. Yeah, exactly, exactly. And that's what it is. And the time that you spend honing those few words to make this statement, I think, can often be far more powerful than. And that's the other major change in my work. I used to have write 3 and 4 and 5 page poems.
Wow.
All the time. I mean, that was just what I do. And now most of my poems are a page, 3/4 of a page. I don't know, maybe I don't love my words as much. But I think what it is I've become more skilled at saying things with less.
You brought in one of your latest works of poetry, Incantations and Rites. Do you want to read one of them that sort of, when you describe writing in a simpler fashion and maybe using fewer words. Can you pick one of your favorites in there and read it to us?
Okay.
And again, we're speaking with Devorah Major, San Francisco's former poet laureate, writer, performer, and part-time senior adjunct professor at the California College of the Arts. And while Devorah is choosing a poem, we'd love to hear from you. If you'd like to talk about your favorite poet, what role poetry has played in your life, or if you have a short favorite poem, since we don't have that much time, you can give us a call at 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. Again, this month is National Poetry Month, and libraries and schools and professors and so many people around the world are coming together, around the country, are coming together to share their favorite poems. So here's Devorah Major reading one of her poems from her latest book.
Okay, and this is a chapbook with Opal Palmer, Adisa, and I called Incantations and Rites. So this is from the incantation section by me, of course. Cosmology Meditation. We are the memory of that place without measure, filling all space that never was and ever will be. Existing as the perfect note, yet making no sound, holding all colors inside a light that was nothing but darkness. We are the memory of a breath that could not be but was, a breath that swelled to bubble burst and then collapse. We are the memory gestated in days that lasted eons as the universe birthed heat, light, rock, ice, mineral, song, us. We are the impossible made flesh, creating infinite possibilities inside the prayers we have become.
So nice. Devorah Major is San Francisco's former poet laureate. She's reading from her latest work, Incantations and Rites. And also, you wrote that with Opal Palmer.
Adisa.
Thank you. And we've got a caller. Let's hear from Lisa in San Francisco. Hi, Lisa. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Rose. I just wanted to give a shout out to two different agencies throughout the Bay Area who are really giving youth their voice and people in the Tenderloin a voice. And one is Youth Speaks.
Yes.
And very powerful to see those children or teenagers, you know, empower themselves with their words and have a really strong stage presence. And then the second is, I was so privileged to work with Janice Mercatani and June Jordan at Poetry for the People at Glide years ago. And again, helping people in recovery or who have been through domestic violence situations, a vehicle to express themselves. So I just, you know, wanted to appreciate both of those organizations.
Well, and let me ask you, Lisa, what role does poetry play in your life, and how would you describe the power of poetry, especially because you brought up Youth Speaks? We've had them on so many times, and they're so powerful and very political, and Absolutely. We invited them this time, but they couldn't join us.
I think for me, there's it's such a craft to be able to use, like your guest was saying, maybe less words, but being able to say it, say more with less, I think is a very powerful skill. And I also just think being able to stand up in front of a group of people and share your story and have it be celebrated is also really powerful.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Thank you so much for calling in, Lisa. Devorah, how would you describe the poetry scene in Northern California?
I would be really arrogant to say what I know. I don't know all of Northern California's poetry scene. I would say in the Bay Area, it's very diverse, but also very much, I don't think there's as much interaction as there might be between communities. I know I went to I was a part of a really nice reading put together at Kearney Street Workshop, which is in the old I House. They have their own place there. Very nice organization in Chinatown. I mean, wonderful arts that also does literary program. And it was African American and Asian poets, Asian Americans, and then, you know, from the Philippines, from Chinese, obviously, you know, just a spectrum of, which was very Vietnamese, you know, very inspiring because there was such cross-fertilization among us. Mm-hmm. But I think that that's more the exception. So you have your worlds of poetry still, you know, in your schools that, you know, and like that. But there's certainly is very vibrant. I mean, there's a lot of open readings. You can go to open readings, you know, not just in San Francisco and Oakland, but in Vallejo and Sacramento. And so, you know, it's alive.
Mm-hmm. And also, what in terms of the issues you tackle, how do you determine whether or not to make a bold statement about an issue of the day. We were just talking about what's happening with all of these racist comments with Clive Bundy and then the Clippers owner. His name just escaped me, but that's getting so much media attention right now. How do you determine what to tackle? Or do you say, I'm just going to write about something that makes people feel good?
Well, I think it depends on what you see your role is as a human on the planet. In my case, yes, I write. I'm a poet. But so for me, I think I have a responsibility to try to build and heal and push back. And therefore, I have a responsibility to write about some issues. But for me, I'm not going to write about the Clippers, but I might, probably will, in fact, I should say, write about the issues of race in the 21st century and how it's still something that's strangling us. So I think that again, the underlying issue rather than the details, and maybe a detail might come up as a little illustration of it, the point. But I really think it's whether you feel personal responsibility. And a lot of people say, well, I just want to live. I can just live. Well, you can. And then the air will keep getting worse and the water will keep rising and wars will keep going on. That's a choice. Or you can push back and you can say, I want to live in a different kind of a planet. And I think then your work, and that's whatever your work is shaped by your own personal morality and imperative.
So what is your process? If you're going to sit down and write a poem about race, obviously you think about all these things that are going on in the news because it's getting so much attention. Can you just talk a little bit about your process?
Okay, that's what I do. I think about it. I'm talking now. I'll be talking, and I talk a lot since I'm blessed to live with my husband, you know, but with a mate who's very intelligent and I can bounce off of.
I'm giving him the thumbs up right now.
But what that means is that he might say something in response to something I say and accuse me, and I go, there's a doorway. Mm-hmm. And then the next time I sit down, it's not that I write what he said, but what that clicked in me. Because a lot of that's what I get. Somebody will say something, or it's a line, I read something. And then I do most of my writing on a computer, but I do a lot of starting by hand. I've gone back to the pen and paper. Hmm. It slows me down. Before, I liked computers because it could catch my thoughts so fast. Sometimes now I like to be the still and the quiet and the no buzz and all of that. And I write a few lines, and I just start. And then I'm very cathartic with it. Everything comes out. So it may run page after page after page. And then I find the poem inside of it. But anything can start. But yeah, I think about what it is a lot, and I talk about that, and I'm working through that. And as I work through it, and as the minute I get a clarity, there I am, and I can go.
Devorah Major is San Francisco's former poet laureate, writer, performer, and part-time senior adjunct professor at the California College of the Arts. And today we are marking National Poetry Month by spending the hour talking about poetry. How has poetry affected your life? We'd love for you to share your favorite poet and maybe your short poem if you'd like. And how would you describe the power of poetry at a time when, as a journalist, I often wonder if people even read articles anymore, the whole article, because mm-hmm. our attention spans are so short. We want everything so fast. I know that on Facebook, people post things and like things without even reading the article. So then when we do these shows, I just wonder, how has people's relationship with something like poetry changed because things are moving so quickly for certain generations, I should say? The toll-free number is 866-798-8255. 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org, or you can leave a comment or your favorite poem on our website, yourcallradio.org. Did you want to tackle one of those questions?
Yeah, well, I wanted to read one of these poems from Guantanamo. I think that one of the reasons poetry is actually rising is because of its brevity, because you can say a lot with a little, because you can be present for one poem and that can feed you, whereas a whole article, and it can analyze and it can talk about a situation and give you a lot in less than the 500, 750, 1,000 words of an in-depth article. It might be able to hit a lot of those points. So I think that might be part of what's getting people back to it.
Hmm.
as well as language with all this, you know, BFF and LOL and all of this stuff, is getting so truncated that there's something that's really nice about this clarity of spirit and message and word in a few words, but not a lot of words, but still that takes you out of that. It's all about initials and like that.
Please. And so tell us about this book.
So this book actually was given to me by Marilyn Fowler, who has a wonderful organization for women. Yeah.
I work with Marilyn, the Women's Intercultural
Network.
Yes,
exactly. And it's called Poems from Guantanamo. Detainees Speak. And, you know, what I loved about it was that you read the book and they're people again. Mm-hmm. How do you make them people? And that's what this editor who did this, Mark Falkoff, did. And this is by Adan... It's by Osman Abu Kabir, who was a Jordanian water truck driver. And he got turned in, like they were just turning people in, to Guantanamo by the Taliban. They said, well, hey, he's Al-Qaeda. And he was wearing a Casio watch, so they said it must be true. So this is his poem. Is it true? Is it true that the grass grows again after rain? Is it true that flowers will rise up in the spring? Is it true that birds will migrate home again? Is it true that the salmon swims back up their stream? It is true. This is true. These are all miracles. But is it true that one day we'll leave Guantanamo Bay? Is it true that one day we'll go back to our homes? I sail in my dreams. I am dreaming of home. To be with my children, each one part of me. To be with my wife and the ones that I love. To be with my parents, my world's tenderest hearts. I dream to be home, to be free from this cage. But do you hear me, O judge? Do you hear me at all? We are innocent here. We've committed no crime. Set me free. Set us free. If anywhere still, justice and compassion remain in this world.
Devorah Major reading from Poems from Guantanamo, The Detainees Speak, edited by Mark Falkoff. And so every poem is sort of similar.
Well, they're different, but yes.
Right. It's from the voice of the detainees.
Exactly.
And again, as you said, it's short and so powerful.
Yeah.
Well, what really affected you with that book?
That was one of the poems that really touched me, was that kind of thing. Like, I mean, of course, given my politics and all, I saw them as human and whole. But like my wife, my children, the flowers, the rain, this, we are people. We are innocent. We are caged. When do we get our day in court? When can we be heard? That was again and again, it was like, look at me. I am a human person. I have a faith. I love. I cherish. I am loved. Why am I in a cage? And to hear that from different perspectives and looking at it, and of course, some of them are very despairing and very, very sad. Producer
Malihay
was talking to me about a poet, Sinan
Antoon, an Iraqi poet.
Yeah, and how dark the poetry was and how much death and darkness and sadness there was in it. And certainly that's in this book, too. And it's to see that and to imagine yourself in their place, because I think that is ultimately what will save us, is if we can really imagine us in other people's shoes and understand that commonality we have, you know.
Devorah Major is San Francisco's former poet laureate, writer, performer, and part-time senior adjunct professor at the California College of the Arts. And we're marking National Poetry Month on today's Your Call. We'd love to hear from you. You can join us at 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. And let's hear from Carla in Oakland. Hi, Carla. Welcome to the show.
I have two short poems, if that's okay.
Yes, please.
I'm working on a performance of my writing now, trying to develop it. These poems are not indicative of what I usually write, so they're very short. Usually I write more lyrical, longer stuff. So this was written in response to all these dry resumes I saw at artist shows, I do visual art too. So the title is I'm Nervous. I don't know why I'm so nervous being on the radio.
Great title.
Artist,
you sound great.
Artist statement in lieu of an MFA from Stanford, a year at the Sorbonne, and any number of multitudinous shows and awards. I learned from birds and the layers of grass. I learned from you. I learned from me. I learned from streetcars. I learned from motorcycle helmets. I learned from years of misery and years of hope. I learned from sky. I learned from trees. I learned from rivers filled with fruit. Color, transparency, rawness, fire. We belong to the earth. That's one.
Thank you.
And then this is the first one I ever wrote years ago. I have six toes which are, at this moment, pointed in the direction east. They're reciting signals to the wind god from Mecca. I don't know what they do, but they certainly get speedy results. Navels start springing from the walls the instant the sixth toe has finished its catechism. We live this way from day to day, abundantly, naming and renaming ourselves and our ancestors. Those are the two.
Thank you.
Beautiful. Thank you so much for calling in.
You're welcome.
Thank you. And it was great. You did great. Thank you, Carla. Let's go next to Andre in San Francisco. Hi, Andre. Welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you, Rose. It's Andre Glacé. I'd like to read a poem called Meditation, which I've read at the San Francisco Poetry Under the Dome, where poets read at City Hall. It's a once-a-year event. It's very exciting to do. This is my poem called Meditation. When I get up in the morning, I begin my weeping meditation. Holding to my broken dreams, I look through the glass of my sorrow until tears flowing from my heart reach to the tops of trees, tears of love of which I cannot speak. I weep until my body becomes its solitary self, until the softness of warm, flowing tears floods my being and restores the impermanence of day.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for calling in.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. And let's go. We have time for one more caller before break. Let's go to Robin in Berkeley. Hi, Robin. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Whenever I think of poetry, and I love poetry, it means a lot to me, and I do think it can change the world, I always think of Muhammad Ali, because I think he has the, has written the shortest poem. Do you guys remember the shortest poem that Muhammad Ali wrote? Or somebody asked him to speak a poem, and this is what he said. Do you remember?
No.
I'm sure I've heard it, because my husband is a Muhammad Ali fan. He said his trainer actually did most of the writing of the poems. But.
The shortest poem he was asked to somebody said, can you give us a poem for us, Muhammad Ali? And he said, me? We.
That's great. Well, thank you for calling in, Robin. On today's Your Call, we are marking National Poetry Month by spending the hour talking about poetry. How has poetry affected your life? How would you describe the power of poetry? And we'd love for you to share your favorite poems and also a poem if it's fairly short. We're speaking with Devorah Major, San Francisco's former poet laureate. It's Your Call. We'll be back after this.
There are many ways you can join in today's conversation on Your Call, on the phone, or by sending an email. The email address is feedback@yourcallradio.org. feedback@yourcallradio.org. You can simply leave a message at the same website if you like, yourcallradio.org. If you'd like to join us live, share your poem perhaps, the number to call is 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-TALK. Coming up at 11 o'clock, the BBC's World Have Your Say. Following that at noon today, Backstory. And then this afternoon at 1, Alternative Radio.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, we'll have a conversation about how development is changing the socioeconomic makeup of cities across Northern California. How can a city develop without displacing longtime residents? This topic is the subject of a recent report that tells the stories of a changing Oakland, where lower-income residents are being pushed out. Of course, we're hearing the same thing about San Francisco, where I just saw an ad for a new two-bedroom condo in the Castro going for about $5,500 a month.
Ooh.
Yeah, $5,500 for a two-bedroom. So we're going to talk about that tomorrow. We'd love to hear from you. How is development changing your city? And today we are marking National Poetry Month, and we're joined today by Devorah Major. She is San Francisco's former poet laureate, writer, performer, and part-time senior adjunct professor at the California College of the Arts. And we'd love to hear from you. What role does poetry play in your life? If you'd like to talk about your favorite poet or if you've written a poem, we'd love to hear it, as long as it's about a minute or less. You can give us a call at 866-798-8255. 866-798-8255. And before we get back to calls, you brought in another poem by one of your favorite poets.
Well, I don't have favorite poems. Well, I have one, Lucille Clifton,
like.
But I didn't bring anything by her. But this is by Tehinbe Jess, and it's called Mercy. And I brought it in because I think the biggest thing happening right now is war on the planet, on all levels. And so I thought that's one of the things. So obviously a lot of poets are writing about it. It's called Mercy, and I actually read it online. But I was really moved by it because I thought it was really a good take on war. And I write a lot of war poetry, too. Mercy. The war speaks at night with its lips of shredded children, with its brow of plastique and its fighter jet breath. And then it speaks at daybreak with the soft slur of money unfolding leaf upon leaf. It speaks between the news programs in the music of commercials, then sings in the voices of a national anthem. It has a dirty coin jingle in its step. It has a hand of many lost hands, a palm of missing fingers, the stump of an arm that is lost, reaching up to heaven, a foot that digs a trench for its dead. The war staggers forward, compelled, inexorable, ticking. It looks to me with its one eye of napalm and one eye of ice, and its hair of fire and its nuclear heart, and yes, it is so human and so pitiful as it stands there, waiting for my hand. It wants to know my answer. It wants to know how I intend to show it out of its misery, and I only want it to teach me how to kill.
Mm. Wow.
Yeah.
And can you name that poet again?
Tehinbe Jess. That's J-E-S-S is the last name. Yeah.
And that's Devorah Major reading that poem. She's San Francisco's former poet laureate. What about the new poet laureate? Are you familiar with his work, Alejandro Murguia?
Yeah.
We asked him to come on. He was going to join us, but he's got jury duty. So hopefully he'll be able to join us if he doesn't get called, I guess. But are you familiar with his work?
I'm familiar with his work. I think he's very good. He certainly is a poet who is very much represented, you know, really speaks for specifically the Mission District and really brings in a strong Latino poetry.
Yeah, he's the first Latino to hold this position.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
What is your role as a poet laureate?
When you are one of the finalists, they ask you what you'll do, and you come up with a role. So my role might be or is different than his or than Janice Meir Kitani or Jack Hirschman, for example, started the San Francisco International Poetry Festival, which we've had, I think, three or four renditions of now. I did a project that was War and Peace on Our Streets, where I had people, children, teens, adults, people who perceived of themselves as poets. It was self, but maybe you write poetry, but you don't think of yourself as a poet. You're in one category. If you do, you're in another. And we published the poems on the web in one a month in the San Francisco Chronicle to just kind of lift poetry. And in that case, I wanted people to pointedly look at issues because I feel that was really important. So each poet laureate kind of chooses what they're going to do. Diane DePrima did workshops. She felt that it was very important, especially with children, but she did workshops in the libraries, in the public libraries. Jack also did that and had each library, they had a little poetry contest where you could go to that library and write, and for your neighborhood, you could be lifted. But I think generally speaking, it's a way to bring poetry out in the city and lift it up and honor it.
And we've got a number of callers on the line, so let's go back to a few calls. Let's hear from Molly in Carmel. Hi, Molly. Welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you so much. That was a tremendous war poem. I'm very aware of, I think it's fabulous that everybody has that poet in them. And one of the people whom I just continually am impressed by and the evolution of, because he speaks also generationally and also tribally, is John Trudell.
Mm. Oh, yes.
And I'm just, I've been getting moved by his language, which for a long time was just extemporaneous speech and now is this tremendous body of spoken word, and speaking about the extremely personal and yet also talking in one poem about, you know, here we are, children of a generation that came out of the Depression and then World War II, and then trying to slot into Father Knows Best and Leave It to Beaver with, you know, shell shock and no answers to all the issues that had come up, and how Elvis and the Rock and Roll Army kind of saved us from that. But I just really want to draw attention. I think he's an extremely important voice. He was one of the first speakers in the 60s who spoke very seamlessly about the feminine as part of the whole consideration of what it is we're confronting in the patriarchal game that seems to be so dominant. And I'm hoping, I understand that there's a project for him to become poet laureate for the state. And if anybody is interested in supporting that, they can drop a letter to that effect to Governor Brown.
John Trudell? And Molly, are you the Molly that's been sending some CDs and books of poetry to the station? Oh, well, thank you so much.
Yeah, I think it's very important, and it's the poetry. The poetry is so deep in all of us. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I just find this a really important voice.
Well, thank you, and I love the documentary about John Trudell. I think it's called Trudell, and it's just really amazing.
I haven't seen it.
Yeah, really good. So thank you. Thanks for calling in. Let's go next to Josiah in Oakland. Hi, Josiah. Welcome to the show.
Hey. Hello?
Hi. Go ahead.
Oh, hey. I'd like to read a poem, if that's all right.
Sure.
All right. This is about a man who you'll never meet. The name of the man that you'll never meet is named Armando Delgado. On the counter of the mercado, next to the chicles and chicharrones, there's a cardboard box with his Xeroxed face on it. It tells me he died trying to cross La Frontera. That box is for donations to send to his familia to help get his body back home. Armando Delgado ran out of water, died on La Frontera, trying to walk here to Califas, just one foot in front of the other. And somewhere, somebody could probably tell us how many more steps he had to go before he got here. But that does not matter to the bones of the man who you'll never meet, whose name was Armando Delgado. Thank you.
Thank you. Wonderful. Important.
Yeah, thank you, Josiah. Thanks for calling. One of our listeners called who couldn't stand the line wanted you to talk about the importance of Langston Hughes.
Wow. You can just say his name. Yeah, Langston Hughes. What's wonderful about Langston Hughes is how he transcends. There's a Chinese poet named Li Po who says a good poet must live 100 years. And Langston Hughes, I've known rivers that I've seen the Mississippi and Paterno. He wrote that when he was 19, and that is almost a 100-year-old poem and is still really vital. And I think that one of the things he's translated into a kajillion, 57 languages or something like that, that his work is known all over the world. And again, he's a very skilled poet, but someone whose work is very accessible. And when he died, I think in the early 70s, maybe late 60s, but the everything had jumped off in terms of really radicalism. And that's, where is the back of the merry-go-round and what happens to a raisin in the sun and, you know, does it simply shrivel or does it explode, that his politics were really cutting in his poetry, but in a very skillful way. It wasn't just, you know, I hate this or I love this or like that. Very important poetry, both as an African-American poet, of course, because that's what he was, who he was, but as a poet, as a world poet, really speaking in the voice, yeah.
And from the Black Man Speaks, Jim Crow's Last Stand in 1943, and this is actually on a lot of T-shirts and things, "I swear to the Lord, I still can't see why democracy means everybody but me."
Yeah.
Langston Hughes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You know, "I too sing America, when will I be able to sit at the table?" Mm-hmm. You know, it just the voice he has, and certainly there's so many, and it's almost sad of his poems that you can find that he wrote in the 40s or the 50s that you can pull right on out, and they are exactly what's happening today for everybody who thinks we made so much progress because there's someone of African descent in the White House or there are more faces on TV or whatever. You know, that the fact that that poetry is still relevant shows that we haven't progressed as much as we would have.
Well, I'm speaking with Devorah Major, San Francisco's former poet laureate, writer, performer, and part-time senior adjunct professor at the California College of the Arts. And we'd love to hear from you. Today we are marking National Poetry Month. What does poetry mean to you? How has it affected your life? If you'd like to talk about one of your favorite poets or share a short poem, you can give us a call at 866-798-8255. 866-798-8255. And if you have any questions for Devorah about the process involved in writing poetry, we'd love to hear from you. What do you hear from your students? And what is their interest in poetry?
Boy, I don't know right now. You know, it's the end of the semester. That's not a good time to ask questions like that. I find that it is for the most part very challenging for me. Not with children. Children are fabulous. But with young adults and my college students, to get them to go somewhere deep other than their love lives, you know, which are or aren't deep, one never knows. But, you know, that to really look at the difficult and look at the hard, I think because we're such a fast, quick, move, you know, and I'm not including my writing students who that's what they do. But I do feel like one of the people mentioned everybody has a poet in them, and I feel like everybody can, you know, find a poem in them for something that's really deep. But you have to go to that scary place in you and that place where you're nothing but questions, nothing but fear, nothing but hope, and be willing to hope knowing that, you know. And so I find it's sometimes it's difficult to get them to take that leap because it's easy to be safe.
Let's go to our next caller. Or actually, let's wait on that. What about children's poetry?
Well, I work with kids yet a lot, and the only thing I like to do more than that is to write. And what's so nice about kids is that they are open and opening to the world, and even kids who may have, because of difficult circumstances, be they economic, be they family, whatever, seem to be shut down. Given the opportunity to write a poem, they go for it. There's a courage in children that, and just a glow. I love their poetry. I love to hear them speak. In fact, I do work at the Fine Arts Museum. Right now I'm working on another brochure that's going to be poems that they wrote about the Mesoamerica and the Inuit collections. In fact, I have a reading at the museum with one of the other poets that I work with there Friday, May 9th at 7.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
Where is that?
At the DeYoung Museum
in
the Corrette Auditorium. But we have up right now, there's a brochure in the Legion with the kids' poetry, and there's another brochure in the African Oceana collection. And to see the way that they can embrace work, artwork, and make it personal and make it reflect on their own life or their own questions about history or their own questions about what's real and what's not. There's a kind of courage there and laughter and humor. I just love their work.
What advice do you give to aspiring poets?
Be honest, be brave, and go for it, and read poetry.
We have a number of emails. I have an email from Zach who says, poetry has played an extremely valuable role in my life growing up in the woods at Stillwater. A lot of nature came to shape my writing. We had several poetry teachers at my elementary school, Fort Ross, where we published poems through the Poems in Schools program. I have a spoken word poetry event, Poetry and Sound Space, at the Arlene Francis Center in Santa Rosa on June 28th. We're going to have poetry with musicians and myself and dancers doing improv dancing with some inspiration from Ira Glass. I would truly appreciate a mention. That's great. And then, yeah, I saw your link, Zach, and we'll put that on our website. Thank you so much for writing in. We have an email from Hank who says, I found the most enjoyment and appreciation for poetry from listening to the Writer's Almanac on NPR.
Oh, yeah, they do one in the morning.
Yeah,
I hear that sometimes.
We play that on our station.
They do some interesting poems.
Yeah. Thank you. And you can also sign up for those poems at npr.org. And then Barrett writes, it hurts to be a poet. You got to have rocks in your head. It hurts to be a poet because nobody gives a dame until you're dead.
Not my experience. What can I say?
It gives a damn. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, I think sometimes it hurts to look at the things that, for me, I need to look at and write about. And I have cried both when writing and reading poems. But I find a great deal of joy and able to find the words and able to find some clarity through poets. So poetry, I don't know. I mean, I guess I have obviously been blessed. I am the third poet laureate. I've been blessed with that my voice has been recognized. So for me, they did give a damn before I was dead. But for me, even before that, I just felt like poetry, my own and other people's, fed me out of the clarity or the peace that it gave me or the courage or whatever. So not my experience.
Where do you look for new poems? I mean, where do you go to read poetry?
Well, because I'm a poet, I get poetry.
Yeah.
I go to readings. I read with people I've read with or I haven't, and it's brought to me. I'm on a couple of lists, and people throw up poems, and you read them, and you see them, and people put a poem in your hands. But my name is Devorah. I am a bookaholic. And I go to bookstores, both used bookstores, and I just pull out books by people I've never heard of, and I read poems, and if I get to the fourth poem in a book that I'm reading, I buy the book. I mean, I feel like that way I read a poet that I just found. In fact, I found Ted Jones, a beat poet, that way at City Lights Bookstore. I was just looking. I pulled it out. I saw it, and I stood there reading it. And I got to the fourth poem. I went, oh, I should just buy this. I'm messing up the pages now.
That's Devorah Major. She's San Francisco's former poet laureate, writer, performer, and part-time senior adjunct professor at the California College of the Arts. And we're marking National Poetry Month today by talking about poetry. If you'd like to call in and talk about how poetry has affected you, how would you describe the power of poetry? If you'd like to talk about your favorite poem, share it, maybe if it's less than under a minute. And then if you've got a favorite poet, we'd love to hear about her or him. The toll-free number is 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org or leave a comment on our website, yourcallradio.org. According to the Academy of American Poets, 10 million people took part in National Poetry Month last year. That's amazing.
How cool is that?
So what are your thoughts on that? I mean, how significant is this month for getting people to really think about poetry?
I think that the fact that there is a month now, which I don't know whenever that started, brings people's attention to it. So no doubt you have listeners who simply listen to your show every morning that, oh, it's poetry today, and they're hearing poetry that they might not engage, which may or may not interest them more. So I think is that, and I think it's an art. I think we take music for granted. Whatever kind of music is the music that feeds our souls, we take it, it's there. We turn on the radio, or we have CDs, or we have digital, you know, it's in the back of your games, the people who play the little electronic games and things. So we take it somewhat for granted as an art. We watch TV shows, which means that's drama, that acting, that art. But the art of poetry, I don't think is as much in the public eye. So I think National Poetry is good, because there's something to be said for that, making it natural, making it not that kind of arcane thing that special people pay attention to or weird people do, that instead it becomes a much more every man's, every woman's kind of art, because that's what it is like in Italy. If you go to Latin American people, regular people will know poems by heart and will recite them to you. You know, it's not an ivory tower occupation. And I think National Poetry Month does something to bring it to make that reality. In fact, it's not that.
They say it's the largest literary event in the world, National Poetry
Is
Month
that right?
in the United States.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Yeah.
I wish we had more international poetry festivals. That said, because most of the other parts of the world are better at giving international poets a voice in that kind of a way. I mean, you read other places. I mean, the first time I went to an international reading, I was invited to Italy. And there were close to 1,000 people coming to see us read. And I think Jack Hirschman, who was the second poet laureate, no, he was after me, the fourth poet laureate of San Francisco. He's like a superstar in Italy for his poetry. So he was there, but and then there were some Italian poets who they knew. But we were from all over, and it's not that they knew us. It was that they came out to see all the international poets. It's what they do. And I wish the United States did more of that, because it's just really quite amazing and wonderful, you know. And then you walk in the town the next day and people come up to you, oh, I saw you read last night. Oh, you are the poet. I saw you.
Wow.
And it's like that kind of a relationship to it. And so I'm really glad that we have that kind of as a month in the United States. But I really wish that we really, because I think we still as a nation are two Americans, American first, American best, all of which is not true. If it ever was, it certainly is not true now. But that if we could have international voices and see ourselves as one in the world.
Why do you think that is?
Because we are America One, America First. Yeah, I think we don't need to. I mean, I think we don't understand we need to. We do need to.
Let's go next to Jordan in Oakland. Hi, Jordan. Welcome to the show.
Hey, how's it going?
Good.
Yeah, I totally love poetry, and I used to hate poetry. I think I used to be really cynical, and I used to tell people that I thought poetry was a dead language. And the more I recover from capitalism, the more I learn to appreciate it. And my favorite poem is by Martina Spada, and it's called Imagine the Angels of Bread.
Do you want to read part of it?
I can't, unfortunately. I don't have it in front of me.
Okay.
But it makes me cry every time I read it.
Martina Spada, people ought to read him. Anyone who hasn't heard of him, absolutely.
Huh.
Fabulous East Coast poet, yeah.
Wow, sounds great. Well, maybe we'll try to find it and put a link up on the website after the show.
Great. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Jordan. I think Recovering from Capitalism is a great title for a
poem. Oh, I'm telling you.
I bet you could do good things with that, Devorah. What about Seamus Heaney, the widely recognized Irish poet who passed away last year? Were you familiar with him?
I was familiar with him, and I've read some of his work. I like his work. I like a lot of the Irish poets in terms of the European poets. I find that Irish poets speak more to me, perhaps because of their own history and experience and the Black Irish and all like that. Again, very rooted in things. I do love nature, too, and nature poems. In fact, there's a great anthology out called Black Nature, which pulls together people of African descent who have written poems about nature, because the perception is we only write poems about political events and we're broader than that. We write about everything like everybody else does. So I certainly do like that. But I do appreciate, too, and of course they write great love poems. Anybody who writes good poetry writes good love poems. But that they really kind of engage history and engage things that are happening in ways I find very exciting.
What makes a good love poem?
The fact that it is personal and distinct and individual in a way that you know they touched what love means to them, and yet it transcends that so you can touch that. Like there's one by Georgia Douglas I almost brought in called, and it's I Want to Die While You Love Me.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the most beautiful poem. It's like 12 lines, but it's about her loving this man so much that she couldn't imagine living a day without him. And it's like, I couldn't, I don't want to sleep without having your arms around me, without your kiss. I want to die while you love me. Mm-hmm. And it's so personal to her, but it's so deep about love. And it's not, I love you, I love you, I love you, I love you more than anything. Oh, I think you're so wonderful, I love you. It's not, you know,
yeah.
Roses are red, violets blue. It's not that, you know. And I think that what mm-hmm. makes a good love poem is that paradox, that it is very individual and deeply personal. And yet it hits the core and the essence of love in such a way that somebody else can grab onto mm-hmm. it.
And it's such a nice visual, your own visual.
Yeah.
We've got time for one more caller, just briefly. Hi, Esther, calling from Santa Cruz.
Hi, I love your program. I love this program. I love that you're honoring poetry.
Thank you.
As a poet, that's such a rarity. I have a short poem.
Okay.
It's called Jewelry of the Soul. My scrawled letters create a path which you walk down. You reconstruct my journey. Your imagination lifts the stones of my words off this page. You set them in the ring of your experience. Image becomes word, becomes image. Poetry is the jewelry of the soul.
Lovely. Thank you so much, Esther.
You're welcome. You're welcome. Yeah,
thank you
for all that you bring out.
Thank you. Enjoy the rest of your day. We've got about a minute left, Devorah. What are you working on next?
Oh, I'm working on so many projects all at the same time, although my goal this summer is to get some of my work sold that's already finished. I am going to be in depth. My mom died last fall. My dad died 2 years before. My dad's a writer, my mom a painter. And with my dad, I made 12 tapes of him before he left. And so I'm going to be redacting those tapes and working on a memoir biography where I'm going to do every other chapter. Because I interviewed him and did it, but also to give context to what he did it. And then I'm working on a poem because I found love after 50s.
Yay.
A book on how to find love. My daughter says dated from the 40s, you know, after that. That's going to be poems and recipes and my journey.
Oh, that's so nice.
Yeah,
see, so there is hope. Love after 50.
I told everybody, you know, I everybody would say, yeah, Devorah, do you know what the odds are? I said, I only need one good man.
Devorah Major is San Francisco's former poet laureate, writer, performer, and part-time adjunct professor at the California College of the Arts. Thank you so much for coming in.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
Always great to see you. Thank you for listening. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's your call. How can a city develop without displacing longtime residents? On the next Your Call, we'll have a conversation about how development is changing the socioeconomic makeup of cities across Northern California. This topic is the subject of a recent report that tells the stories of a changing Oakland where lower-income residents are being pushed out. How can cities grow and thrive without squeezing out many of the people who live there? And how is your city changing? Join the conversation on the next Your Call with me, Rose Aguilar, and you. Support for Your Call comes from the listeners of KALW. To sign up for our podcast or newsletter or to share the show on Facebook or Twitter, visit yourcallradio.org. Malihe Raz is on and Ali Budner produced the show. Matt Martin is our executive producer. Phil Hartman is our chief engineer and Joe Burke is the studio engineer. Our theme music was composed and performed by Live Human. Your Call is produced by KALW in San Francisco. Special thanks to our partners at KUSP in Santa Cruz. You can email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org.